two-time winner of the American League's Most Valuable Player Award, Slugger Hank.
Wise throws a fast curve, and Greenberg sucks it out into left field. It may drop in there for a base hit. It is a home run for Hank Greenberg.
The Life and Times of Hank Greenberg is a new documentary about America's first Jewish baseball star. Greenberg was chosen Most Valuable Player in 1935 and 1940, and in 1938 was three home runs shy of breaking Babe Ruth's record. Greenberg played first base and outfield for the Detroit Tigers from 1933 to 46, and for the Pittsburgh Pirates in 47. He was voted into the Hall of Fame in 1956. My guest is one of his sons, Steven Greenberg, who's featured in the new documentary. Steven played five seasons in the minor leagues, then became a lawyer and sports agent, and served 3 years as deputy baseball commissioner under Faye Vincent. The new documentary focuses on the anti-Semitism Hank Greenberg faced early in his career and what a hero he was to Jewish Americans. I asked Steven Greenberg about the anti-Semitism his father contended with in his own ball club.
Well, he had a couple of instances early in his career, and again, the times were so different. It's almost like it might as well have been a different century compared to what I knew growing up. But he had one teammate who, without any particular malice, came over and looked at him sort of curiously when they first met and kept staring at him. And my dad said, what's the problem? He said, well, I heard that Jews had horns, and I don't see your horns. Where are they? And this was a fellow who'd grown up in Alabama, and this was what he, growing up as a kid in the 1920s, was taught, that the Jews had horns. So those kinds of stereotypes, which seem absurd and ridiculous in the year 2000, existed then, and he had to deal with them.
What about the fans? What did he face with the fans?
Well, he eventually won them over. Certainly in Detroit, he won them over in a big way, because the great thing about sports is that, and sports fans, is that ultimately, it's what you do on the field that counts. In opposing parks, however, he certainly during the 1930s had a difficult time. He constantly had a barrage of anti-Semitic slurs shouted at him from opposing dugouts and from opposing bleachers, and it just became something he dealt with literally every day in his life. And in talking to him years later, he actually believed that it made him a better player. It was a spur, if you will, to keep him on his toes and make him do better on the field, because he was constantly being egged on, if you will, by the fans.
Although he had to face a lot of discrimination within baseball and from the fans, he was also like an incredible hero to Jewish baseball fans. And I think that has to do in part with the fact, I mean, not only was he the first great Jewish baseball player, but I think his presence was particularly meaningful for a lot of Jewish people, because one of the stereotypes of Jews is that they aren't particularly physical, strong, or athletic.
Well, I think that's absolutely true, Terry. One critic wrote, and I think it's an interesting insight, that prior to the establishment of the State of Israel, when Jews wanted to look for one of their own who did something heroic in a physical sense, it was Hank Greenberg. After the establishment of the State of Israel, of course, we have many examples in Israel, and in fact, Israel itself almost becomes the symbol of Jewish physicality. But certainly in the 30s and in the 40s, when my dad was playing, most Jews were not on the athletic field, and he was a tremendous hero in the Jewish community, and really well beyond that. The most stirring moment that I've had vis-a-vis my dad in my lifetime came in 1983, when his uniform was retired, his uniform number was retired in Detroit. And I went back with him, and there was a 55,000 fan capacity crowd at Tiger Stadium, and between games of a doubleheader, he was called onto the field and his number retired, and 55,000 fans stood up, and I guarantee you most of these were not Jews, and most of them never saw him play. These were children and grandchildren and people who may have seen him play, and gave him about a 3-minute standing ovation. And it was amazing to me how much he was remembered and how much his legend is still alive in the city of Detroit.
Did he know Jackie Robinson, and did he relate to the threats and the slurs that Robinson faced when he integrated Major League Baseball?
Absolutely. And it comes out in the film. One of the coincidences of his career is that at the end of 1946, my dad was sold to the Pittsburgh Pirates after a long career in Detroit. He almost retired but decided to play that 1 year. And 1947, of course, was the year that Jackie Robinson broke in with the Brooklyn Dodgers. So my dad saw as a new National Leaguer firsthand what Jackie was going through and really did go out of his way, reached out to Jackie. I think Jackie acknowledged that Hank Greenberg was the first star player who reached out to him and encouraged him and gave him a big boost. Certainly my dad recognized that much of what Jackie was going through was similar to what he had gone through, although he said to his dying day that he thought he had it tough till he saw what Jackie went through, and it was nothing compared to what Jackie went through.
My guest is Steven Greenberg, a son of the legendary baseball player Hank Greenberg, and there's a new documentary about Hank Greenberg called The Life and Times of Hank Greenberg. Did your father think of himself as religious, and did his sense of his own Jewish identity change when he faced so much discrimination?
He had a very strong religious grounding and sense of himself as a Jew. He was raised Orthodox. However, he was not a religious person. He was not. He didn't go to temple, and he was what I guess you would call a secular Jew today, but still one with a very, very strong Jewish identity, obviously never denied his Jewishness, and was very, very cognizant at an early age of the fact that he was a symbol to an entire community of Jews and the importance of what that meant as a role model.
There's a story that's told in the documentary about him, The Life and Times of Hank Greenberg, that I'm going to ask you to tell. This is the story of how he had to decide whether or not to play on the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, in a game in which the Tigers had the chance to win the pennant.
Yes, and what amazes me, Terry, about this story is that he was only 23 years old when this happened, and he had no agent. In those days, players didn't have agents and advisors. He had to deal with this really all on his own in a strange city with relatively few friends around, but the year was 1934. The Tigers were pushing for the pennant, fighting against the Yankees in the latter days of September. And the Jewish holidays rolled around. Actually, on Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, he sought help from the rabbis, the elders in the Jewish community in Detroit. And the chief rabbi of Detroit apparently found a piece of scripture from the Talmud that said that on Rosh Hashanah, the children played in the streets of Jerusalem. And literally cleared my father to play on Rosh Hashanah. He did play, hit two home runs, and the Tigers won the game 2-1. The following week, however, was Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement and the holiest of holy days in the Jewish calendar. And there was no question that he wouldn't play that day. He didn't. He sat out. He went to a synagogue, apparently walked in and received a standing ovation in the middle of the service in the Orthodox temple in Detroit, which is, let's say, not the usual custom. And the Tigers lost that day, but the good news is they went on to win the pennant. Out of that episode, I think much of my father's legend has grown. He is remembered to this day as not having played on Yom Kippur, and it is amazing at how many Yom Kippur sermons around the country I hear that to this day the rabbi will refer to the fact that Hank Greenberg didn't play baseball on Yom Kippur.
You tell the story in your father's autobiography, which was written with the sports writer Ira Burkow, about how once on Yom Kippur, he told all of his kids, to take off from school, and he took you all to the planetarium, not to synagogue.
He had the right idea. He just couldn't do it in the traditional sense. He wasn't, as I said, he was not a traditional religious person. Ironically, he lived by the Ten Commandments. Those were his guiding principles. But he didn't believe that organized religion was for him. Accordingly, you're absolutely right. When I was about 11 years old, one day we got up and Dad said, "You're not going to school today, boys. I'm taking you. It's a special day. It's Yom Kippur, and Jews don't go to school and don't go to work on Yom Kippur. But get dressed, we're going somewhere." So we got dressed, and he took us to the planetarium. We sat in the darkened planetarium looking up at the stars for about a half an hour, and then went home, and I thought it was great, and for some time thought that Yom Kippur was the day that the Jews went to the planetarium.
Yeah. Did he play baseball with you when you were a kid?
he played all sports with us, mostly tennis. When he gave up, when he stopped playing baseball, he took up tennis with an absolute passion. He played every day. Even into his 70s, he was probably playing 5 days a week. He passed away when he was 75 prematurely from cancer, but up until the time he got sick, he was an avid tennis player. So when we grew up in Cleveland, he was getting into his tennis career, if you will. So he had us out on the tennis court hitting balls from the time we were six. And sure, he played some baseball with us, but never encouraged us to play organized baseball. Rather, just wanted us to play all sports and understand the value of physical exercise.
Was it inhibiting to learn from a brilliant athlete who was your father?
You know, it wasn't so much. What it was intimidating. I mean, he was, first of all, a big guy, and we were little tykes then, and he was competitive. And if you're the hardest thing for me, and I used to still get shivers in my 30s, was playing doubles with him and having him as my partner and having him glare at me when I missed an easy shot. Boy, that was withering. He was a very competitive guy, and he had a very loving father, and I think we became, my brother and I, very good athletes, in part because we understood the value of hard work, and we didn't want that glare if we made a mistake.
My guest is Steven Greenberg. His father, Baseball Hall of Famer Hank Greenberg, is the subject of a new documentary. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Steven Greenberg. He's featured in the new documentary about his father, The Life and Times of Hank Greenberg. Steven Greenberg, you played baseball professionally for a while. You were in the minor leagues for about 5 years.
Right.
Did your father want you to be a major league player, or did he try to discourage you from that life?
I think he was very proud. He never pushed me in that direction. It became apparent when I was in college, though, that I had a little bit of talent, and I really liked it. And I made the decision, having never played Little League or any organized baseball as a kid, to play in a summer league during college, a college league for sort of top college players that they have up in Cape Cod, still have it up there in the summer. And I think he was very proud. I was drafted by the Washington Senators and signed a contract with them. He never came around much. He would come probably once a season in my five minor league seasons and come and stay wherever I was playing for 2 or 3 days and watch a few games. But he didn't want to be in the way. He understood that when he showed up at a minor league ballpark in Geneva, New York, or Spokane, Washington, that suddenly all the press was out and the cameras, and it put pressure on me, which it did. So he didn't want that, and he didn't need to be in the limelight. So he watched it from afar. I think he was proud. I think he was glad I gave it a shot. He would have loved it had I made it to the big leagues, but he certainly didn't pressure me.
Did you feel bad that you couldn't fill your father's shoes in baseball?
Well, I wasn't stupid enough to ever think I could fill his shoes. I did read the record books, and I realized that I was not going to be hitting 58 home runs and doing what he did on the field. I thought I had a chance to be a journeyman major league player, and when it panned out that I was going to be a journeyman AAA player, I went back to law school and never regretted it.
You went to law school and ended up representing players.
I did.
Was your approach towards salary negotiation and how much is a fair amount for a baseball player to earn, was that all affected by your father's achievements and his attitude towards salary?
Well, he was a tough negotiator on his own behalf. I would have loved to have had a player with his statistics to argue on behalf of, because it would have been pretty easy pickings in this environment today. I remember one conversation I had with him. I had a young player who was a good little player, second baseman. He'd hit about 246 the year before. So I was talking to my dad about what I would ask for in terms of a raise the next year. He said, well, what did he hit? I said, he hit 246. He said, you're going to ask for a raise with 246? You should just ask for a uniform. It didn't make sense to him the way salaries had exploded in light of the level of performance that he was seeing. He had no qualms about the great players, the star players making huge money. What he didn't really understand is how the journeyman players or the mediocre players could be getting these huge million-dollar salaries. And that's just, I think, the transition of baseball from a game, a pastime, to part of the entertainment industry.
Well, I figure also your father's attitude toward salaries probably changed when he started working in the front office as opposed to being a player.
Yeah, I would have hated to have had to go in as a player one-on-one and negotiate with Hank Greenberg, the general manager. In fact, Al Rosen told a great third baseman for the Cleveland Indians, also Jewish by coincidence, so sort of a protege of my dad when my dad was a general manager in Cleveland. Rosen told me that one time he went in to negotiate with my dad, and my dad sat down and said, "Well, Al, let me look at your statistics now. This was your third year. You hit 321. In my third year, I hit 340. You had 27 home runs. In my third year, I had 44 home runs." And he went down the list. And Rosen, who had had a very, very good year, said he left the room feeling like he'd had a terrible year because all my dad could do was compare him to his own accomplishments. So I think he was probably a tough negotiator as a front office executive.
In your years as an agent and in your years from 90 to 93 as deputy commissioner of baseball, did you know a lot of players who revered your father, or did you find that a lot of players didn't have much of a sense of baseball history?
Not enough have a sense of baseball history. On the other hand, there were a couple of instances, one in particular I remember, when David Winfield, a great player, future Hall of Famer, I think, at the time was coming back from a very difficult back surgery. He'd been out an entire season, had disc surgery, and was trying to make a comeback. His agent had given him a copy of my dad's book, which he read while he was recuperating. And I remember seeing Dave out at Yankee Stadium one day, and he took me aside. He said, "You know, I'm trying to come back this year, and your dad's somewhat of an inspiration to me. I never met him," he said, "but I read in his book that he missed 4.5 seasons during World War II, didn't pick up a bat for 4.5 years, and came back after 4.5 year layoff and led the team to the pennant in 1945. So if he can do that, then I think maybe I can come back after 1 year off." So you do get that kind of a story occasionally. And of course, anyone who ever met my dad loved him. The ball players that I represented, I would always bring around to the Beverly Hills Tennis Club, which was my dad's hangout, and we would have lunch together. And anyone who ever met him and had a chance to talk baseball with him would always ask me about him.
Well, Steven Greenberg, I thank you very much for talking with us.
I appreciate it. My pleasure.
Steven Greenberg is featured in the new documentary about his father, The Life and Times of Hank Greenberg. It's now playing in New York and Boston, opens in Baltimore this weekend, and in Detroit at the end of the month. It's also playing at several Jewish film festivals.